and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, healthcare costs in Alaska. Healthcare costs are rising, and things here are already more expensive than they are in the lower 48. How does the cost of healthcare affect the state's fiscal future? That's up for debate this hour as we bring you a panel hosted by Alaska Common Ground. You'll hear from economist Musin Gutabi, Deb Erickson of the Alaska Healthcare Commission, insurance broker Greg Loudon, and Doug Eby of the South Central Foundation. Throughout the hour, you'll hear the panelists reference PowerPoint slides. By and large, this hour makes sense without them, but if you want to follow along, you can find them on our website at alaskapublic.org. Scroll down and look for Addressing Alaskans in the middle of the page. This panel was recorded on May 9th at the BP Energy Center. It was significantly shortened for broadcast, so if you'd like to hear the complete forum, it's also linked to on our website. Our first speaker is economist Musin Gutabi with UAA's Institute of Social and Economic Research.
Nationally, we spend about $2.6 trillion on healthcare, right? And so what does that actually mean? That means it's 18% of GDP. Health economists really like to talk in terms of GDP, gross domestic product. That's basically the overall output that's produced in the country, right? And so out of everything that we've produced, how much of that production actually is devoted to healthcare expenditures, right? So 2.6 trillion, around 18%. Now, that leads us to the next question. Well, okay, fine. 18%, what does that mean? That means that out of the economic pie, we're basically allocating almost 20% to healthcare expenditures, and that's been growing over time, right? And so that means that out of all the other things that we like to buy, the more we devote to healthcare expenditures, the less resources we have to actually allocate to those other things, right? And so, and one of the overarching issues that I'll be talking about is the fact that healthcare expenditures as a share of GDP have actually been growing over time, and the costs that we spend on healthcare are growing much, much faster than actual economic growth, right? And so that means that over time, the share that we're actually spending keeps growing because healthcare expenditures are far outstripping the growth of the economy as a whole, right? And so that means it's not a healthcare problem, it becomes an economic problem, right? And then it becomes a governmental problem because we're actually having to take resources away from something else in order to devote them to healthcare expenditure. And so that's really why this is an actual problem. When you talk to an economist or you talk to a healthcare specialist and you say, why are healthcare costs expensive? They'll give you a laundry list of things that I think every single person here is familiar with. They'll say it's administrative overhead. They'll say it's physicians' incomes. They'll say it's because people are not paying enough out of pocket. They'll say it's technology. And to the economist, technology is the catch-all, right? And so we innovate a lot, and therefore we bear a lot of the burden of the healthcare expenditures, right? And so, and there are numerous rationales as to why we actually pay so much for healthcare. Yes, it's an Alaska problem, but it's a country problem, right? And so we like to think that we're terribly different, but the reality is we are struggling with the same issues that every state is struggling with. And I'll present some of the rationales why I think that it's, while it's, it may be more pronounced here, it's really not as different as we like to think. And this is really one of the things that I think you guys see a lot. So this is the spending per capita, right? And so spending, healthcare spending per individual. And as you can see on the far right of the distribution, Alaska is basically second highest, right? So that's basically the dollar amount that we spend per individual on healthcare costs, right? And so that's from 2009. So that's from the Center of Medicare Services. And that tells you that we basically spent $9,100 per individuals on healthcare expenditures. The US is right in the middle, and that's $6,800, right? And so the only two places that are higher than us, and we can ignore DC, is Massachusetts. Right? And the caveat with Massachusetts is that they've obviously passed Romney Care or the mini version Obamacare in 2006, which means that their costs were rising a little bit faster than every other place. And so from a per individual basis, we spend essentially more money than any other state. And as you can see, that gap is fairly large. Now, the immediate question is, wow, that is a pretty significant gap between the US average and what we're actually spending. And I like to follow that with the fact that, but we're a lot richer, right? And so one of the things that people use when they like to talk about healthcare expenditures, they say the US spends a lot of money on healthcare expenditures, but the US is a lot richer than a lot of the other developed nations. The same argument can arguably be made for our spending. And this is showing us GSP or gross state product, meaning that out of everything that we've produced in the state, how much does each person make essentially, right? And so if we were to divide the overall output that's produced in the state of Alaska by every Alaskans, we get $71,000 for Alaska and $46,000 for the US, right? And so from the amount of goods and services that are produced, or the value of goods and services that are produced in the state, let's go ahead and divide that by the number of individuals that live in the state of Alaska, we find that per individual, or GSP per individual, is really, really high, which means that as countries become wealthier, they tend to spend a lot more money on healthcare. That could also be made here, where we, per individual, make a lot more money than the state average, and that is one of the underlying reasons for potentially why we spend more money on healthcare. I'm not saying it's a definitive answer, I'm not saying that it contributes a lot to it, but I'm saying in order for us to have an honest conversation about it, we need to basically try to understand where we sit relative to the rest of the country in terms of actual costs, but also in terms of standard of living, in terms of what we actually produce. And this is the other thing that I think people get really, really interested in, is how much do we spend as a share of gross state product, right? Remember I told you that the US allocates 18% of its GDP to healthcare expenditures. We as a state only spend 13% of our gross state product on healthcare expenditures, right? So we spend a smaller share of our output on healthcare expenditures than the country as a whole, right? We're more expensive per individual. We have a much higher gross state product, or we make a lot more money per individual, and we spend a smaller share of that gross state product on healthcare expenditures. Now, some of you may be saying, well, why is that important? It's really, really important because it's the share of everything that's produced that's actually going towards health expenditure. Now remember, again, we're a resource-dependent state and our GSP is oversized because of resources. But again, that's really important to take into account when trying to understand this healthcare question. Go ahead. And so everything that I was showing you, like I said, the source of everything there is from the Center for Medicare Services. And one of the nice things about it is that it shows us expenditures from essentially 1991 to 2009, right? And it shows us those expenditures by state, by category. And so this graph goes, well, let's not talk about one point in time. Let's actually talk about what's happened to growth rate of spending, healthcare spending per individual, right? And let's compare them with some of the states that we always hear about, right? We always hear about Washington, we always hear about Oregon, and we always hear about the US average, right? And so what that graph does is it basically takes healthcare spending per individual in Alaska, healthcare spending per individual in Oregon, Washington, and the US, and says, at what rate has that spending per individual changed over time, right? And the blue line, which obviously is ballooning over the rest, is Alaska, right? And so that's what I'm showing you there is the average yearly growth rate in spending from 1991 to 2009, right? And so the average yearly growth in healthcare spending per individual is 7.2% in Alaska, right? And so the equivalent growth rate for the US is 5.9, Oregon is about 5.7 or so, and Washington is 5.5, 5.6, right? And so not only are we spending more per individual, but the rate at which that spending per individual is growing is faster than these other places. And those are very, very different things, right? Because one can potentially argue that we spend more money per individual, but we're far, but we're isolated, but we have fewer doctors. But there is no rationale why growth rates should be faster based on place-specific factors, right? And so you can very easily, and I buy the argument that there are some Alaska-specific factors that explain why there is the gap, right? And so at any one point in time, we're gonna be spending more on any commodity than a lot of other places. But the rate at which we grow has nothing to do with those place-specific factors, right? And so it has much less to do with those place-specific factors. And so that's a distinction that's really important. Go ahead. And so rather than talk about healthcare spending, I want us to go into where in the world is this money going, right? And so, and the national health account, so the caveat here, and this is true for a lot of healthcare statistics, is the caveat is that the numbers are terrible, right? And so the way we collect healthcare data is the gold standard is the national health accounts, right? And so what the national health accounts essentially do is they say, for us to be able to collect any sort of statistics about expenditures, let's divide expenditures into categories. Let's talk about hospitals, let's talk about physicians, let's talk about dental services, and let's make sure that we collect data from each of those components and then add them up in order to talk about the actual health spending. And so this is what that's showing you, is that it's actually dividing the pie of spending into its respective categories, right? And what that's showing you is that 73% of the healthcare costs are essentially hospital care and physician care, right? And everything else. So the only other part that makes a dent are prescription drugs, right? And so we can talk all we want about this, that, the other. The reality is that we're spending 73% on hospital care and physician care. And so the equivalent share for the US as a whole is about 65, 66%, right? So we spend a larger share on those two components than the US as a whole, right? And so, and that's again important in trying, because the way I like to think about this is we need to try and decompose this puzzle of healthcare costs, and then we need to figure out which portions of the healthcare pie are actually sensitive to policy changes, right? And so rather than simply saying they're expensive and doctors are making too much money, let's figure out what are the portions that in which we're actually spending the most money, and then what are the things or what are the policies that can potentially be implemented in order to make a dent in those subcategories. And there are some rigidities that I'll talk about here in a second that are just not going anywhere, right? And so even with great solutions, which there are many of, a lot of which are very, very difficult to implement, the actual floor of spending is still gonna be very high. And so hopefully these guys are gonna be talking about some of those solutions that are gonna get us close to that floor, but the reality is that the floor is not zero, it's not a billion, it's not 2 billion. So I've shown you numbers, I've told you stories. People now take those numbers and say, the fact that we're growing faster, the fact that we're spending more, suggests that there are inefficiencies in the Alaska market. And I say, no way. That's not enough, right? And so they're very well maybe, and there are. But those numbers are not sufficient to reach that conclusion, because you can't decouple spending from characteristics of people that live in the state, meaning how many people have insurance, how many people have certain diseases, how many people see a doctor. You also cannot remove from the conversation the fact that there is Medicaid spending that's not going anywhere, right? 127,000 people are on Medicaid, 60% of whom are children, right? The average amount of spending on Medicaid is $10,500, and I'm rounding, right? That's out of the 127,000, the average we spend is $10,500, okay? Now, from the 127,000, 20% of those people are either disabled or elderly, okay? The reason I'm actually decoupling that is because the average amount of spending for that 20% is $25,000 per individual, right? So that's half of the Medicaid bill, right? That's not going anywhere, right? And so, and those rigidities, meaning that difference between the amount that we spend for the elderly and the disabled and adults and children is, again, that gap has been steady, has been rigid for many, many years. And that's really important to acknowledge when we're talking about potential solutions. So again, $1.4 billion that's going towards 127,000 people on Medicaid, that's $1.4 billion that, again, is just not going to, and we're not talking expansion, right? And so, and we're not talking whether this is good, bad, average. 5% of the U.S. population is responsible for 50% of the costs, right? So rigidities, we have them here as well, right? And so that's just true of any healthcare program. You have a small portion of the population that's served that's responsible for an oversized portion of the expenditures, right? And so when we talk solutions, ignoring or isolating these things and not having them be part of the conversation, I think can lead to misleading discussions. Because you can't just say, all right, we're going to fix the system without saying that these rigidities exist. These rigidities potentially can be tweaked. Potentially we can make a dent in them. But again, I think that it's really important to move the conversation from this is a problem that can be fixed into, yes, this is a problem in which we should be looking for marginal solutions that are going to potentially get us closer to our competitors, get us closer to other places. And the other thing that really, I think, and I'm not sure what the source of it, and I've asked many people, is that we pay more for almost every single commodity, right? And so, and yet when we talk about healthcare costs, the conversation becomes healthcare is expensive and everything else seems to be okay, right? And so I always tell the story about, there was a commercial on television about Pizza Hut that said a large for $10.99, and I log on to my computer, type 99508, and it says that deal is not available, that same pizza costs $22, right? And so, and I mean, that applies here, right? And so, but we kind of just put that aside and say, no, but healthcare is a huge issue. So anyway, that's my 2 cents. Thanks for listening, and hopefully these guys are gonna give us some good nuggets.
And thanks for coming. This is a great turnout. My name is Deb Erickson, and I'm the director of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. Mark was mentioning just a few minutes ago that our life at this point is pretty short. The commission was created by the legislature about 5 years ago to study issues related to costs and quality of healthcare. And with the budget crisis that the state is facing right now. I know the governor doesn't like to call it a crisis, but the significant budget challenges we're facing right now, the legislature has defunded the commission starting with the new state fiscal year. But hopefully, I'm real confident, and especially with forums like this and opportunities to continue to talk about what the commission has learned and to talk about, more importantly, the solutions that we've identified, I'm real confident that our work is going to move forward without us, and that's fine. It's hard to follow Mussini, he's such a good teacher. But I'm going to try to go, and we really don't want to dwell so much on the problems, but I wanted to talk a little bit about what some of the challenges related to high healthcare costs the commission identified before we get into solutions. And so the first point here, one other disclaimer too, not necessarily a disclaimer, but something I like to point out and talk about a little bit, because it's so easy to play the blame game and to start demonizing different sectors. And I just wanted to apologize in advance if it offends any of the insurance brokers in the room. I don't know if we have more than one physician or hospital. I don't see any hospital administrators. But when we talk about these problems, it really isn't any of these individual sectors or individual players' fault. The system as it's designed is fundamentally flawed, and we all need to work together on fixing the system and transforming the system so it works better for patients and for our communities. I think it's important to understand that employer-sponsored insurance, which is the most important source or the most significant source of insurance coverage in our country, has been declining at a pretty regular rate over the past 20 or 30 years. So looking back, the blue line there is the United States, the red line is Alaska. And this graph shows the percentage of the population that is covered by employer-sponsored insurance. And so since 1980, where the United States, in the United States, 71% of U.S. citizens were covered by employer-sponsored insurance, we've declined over the past 30 years to the point where now in both Alaska and in the United States, about 55% of the population is covered by employer-sponsored insurance, and time will tell what will continue happening over time, what is expected with the requirements in the Affordable Care Act is that's going to kind of level out and stabilize at about 50% of the population into the future. I think it's important to understand that this impacts not just individuals and their access to insurance coverage and employers and others who are responsible for paying for insurance. It really has a ripple effect throughout our economy. And what this graph shows is intended to just give you a sense of what the local impact is. And this is looking back at the per student cost of educating a student in the Anchorage School District and how that's changed over the past 30 years. So you can see it's increased significantly. The blue bar at the bottom is teacher salaries. This is adjusted for inflation. But teacher salaries over the past 30 years in Anchorage have stayed flat, while the cost of the red bar that grows significantly over time as that proportion and driving the overall increase is the cost of employee benefits, and of course a significant part of that being employee health benefits. That's just a few highlights of some of the issues the commission has considered. The commission has been very focused on cost of health care, and so all of our findings and solutions are tied in some way to addressing the challenges of cost of health care. And I wanted to just spend a couple of minutes. Mohsin pointed out that this isn't just an Alaska problem, it's a national problem. There are factors in Alaska related to our cost of care that are different. And so the commission really tried to dig in and understand what is it that's different about Alaska. Because one of the other things about the commission is that we were very focused on our charges to advise state government on policies for improving healthcare cost quality and access. And so focusing on what's different about our state, we thought would help inform recommendations to the legislature and to the administration and changes that they could make. And this is just some highlights of some of the things, the issues that we considered. There is a particularly high rate of uninsured and underinsured Alaskans in our state, and that's important for understanding how cost shifting happens, as well as a number of other things. Our healthcare delivery system here is very fragmented. We have a number of separate systems between the tribal health system. They all interact. Patients flow between them. It's very complicated. I don't mean to oversimplify it, but generally we have a real strong, vibrant, and important tribal health system in this state. It's a significant provider of care in most of rural and all of frontier Alaska. Then we have a strong military presence here, so the military and the VA play an important role in our healthcare delivery system and understanding how that plays. And then the private healthcare delivery system, thinking of that as another part of the system and how those all interact is important. But the system, because of these three major systems, but then within these systems, there isn't much integration between hospitals and physicians and other providers, and so the fragmentation just creates inefficiencies. So that's and our system, or lack of system, is probably more fragmented than probably in any other state, I would imagine. But another, of course, important issue is the fact that we have such a small population spread across such a huge geographic area. So we not only have the transportation costs that are associated with that, but there's also an issue with lack of economies of scale when we have, you know, hospitals and small communities that aren't on road systems, and you need a minimum level of infrastructure to provide care, but you might have a smaller pool of patients to spread that care across. So that's also an important issue. The commission also found that there are some pretty significant market imbalances between payers and providers, and I think there might be more discussion about that in a few minutes, and I'll get to that in some of the solutions. There are high operating costs in rural Alaska and also high operating margins in urban Alaska. The commission has came up with over 75 specific policy recommendations, but all of those can be organized around what we had identified as eight core strategies for transformation of the healthcare system. So the first of those is about addressing the waste problem. It's making sure that the best available evidence is used for making decisions. Just as an example, the waste that occurs when an unnecessary x-ray is provided, for example, is part of the cost, and it also causes harm to patients. So there are a whole series of more specific recommendations for addressing that strategy and addressing that problem. Another one, and an important one, is increasing price and quality transparency. I think sunshine is the best disinfectant. It's not just about helping consumers understand better, which is really significant, what price they're going to pay when they walk through the door of a doctor's office or a hospital. It goes a lot more broadly than that. These sorts of conversations and studies that help us understand better what the price and quality issues are in our system. We have more specific recommendations about that as well. The next one is about payment reform. So we're moving away from fee-for-service reimbursement to paying for value and rewarding outcomes. Again, this is just kind of a highlight level of, we have more specific strategies for what we would do to implement these. Engaging employers is a real important point, and pointing out that they're responsible for half of all of our health insurance coverage, and that we all spend a good portion of our waking hours with our employer, that they play an important role in employee wellness, but also there are lots of opportunities for improving employee health plan design, and so we have a series of recommendations about that. Enhancing quality and efficiency at the front end of care. It's about strengthening primary care, care coordination, and care management. I'll leave that conversation to Dr. Eby. We spent time studying about strategies for improving end-of-life care. With Medicare spending about 25% of all expenditures in the last 6 months of life, I think is the statistic. It was one of the issues that the commission looked at. And so we have some recommendations and a couple specific to the legislature where we could make improvements that would not only improve the quality of care for patients and their families who are seriously ill, but also extend their lifespan and save costs. We can talk about that maybe more in our discussion. I'm going to hit a couple of highlights for the legislature in a second and then be done. And then creating conditions for folks to be healthy and focusing on prevention. And finally, the last core strategy was building the foundation of sustaining a healthcare delivery system that is functioning well, and that's about having good information systems in place, other technological aspects like telehealth, also workforce development, and leadership for continuing these conversations. I'm going to just hit one slide here and I think be ready to wrap up. State legislative solutions. I thought I'd focus on legislative solutions. I see we have a couple of legislators in the room. And we have a long list of recommendations we've made to the legislature. I think these are probably the three most significant from among the commission's recommendations. Establishing an all-payer claims database, which would provide a data pool for doing the types of analyses for that our economists could understand better what our challenges are. These databases, I think there are about 18 other states right now that have them or about to turn on the flip a switch for them. They're used to also provide more consumer information, consumer-facing web portals that provides information on healthcare prices in their communities. There are many uses, public health uses for this data as well, and it requires legislation to require insurers to provide their data. One of the beauties of these is that it doesn't require hospitals and physicians to participate in having to submit data to a data repository. It is all about just the few insurers that we have submitting their claims data, as well as Medicaid and Medicare. To this database. Enacting legislation to increase transparency, and we have some more specific legislative recommendations beyond both what the creating the all-payer claims database would do to facilitate transparency that we could enact in law to help make prices more available to consumers. And then we've also identified, I think I will leave to Greg, a little bit more of an explanation of what this might mean, is that our insurance laws actually specific to our state add to the imbalance in market power and increases pricing power for providers over the ability of payers to be able to negotiate prices. And that's something that the healthcare actuarials identified as one of the cost drivers between higher prices in Alaska and the rest of the country. So I think, and there's one last thing I thought I would just share too. Let's skip this. You can go to the last slide. This is not a commission recommendation. The commission did not study the Affordable Care Act beyond trying to understand better what the how the Affordable Care Act was affecting our healthcare delivery system, but. One of the things that I think, while we apologize to particularly hospitals and physicians up front at the beginning of this conversation because we didn't mean to blame them, at the same time, they're the ones who are going to shoulder the burden in trying to deal with and address the significant system and transformation and reform that we need to, especially through payment reform drive. And the governor's priority right now to expand Medicaid, he's identified that it's not just about economic and state budget benefits and also increasing insurance coverage in the state, but he talks about it as a catalyst for reform. And I just wanted to explain for a second what that means is that I think he sees it as an opportunity for bringing the uninsurance rate down in this state where especially uncompensated care is so high. And we, other states that have expanded Medicaid, have found that that expansion has contributed to reducing uncompensated care in the hospitals by about 30% in just 1 year. And so this, in part, could serve as the cash infusion to help support the payment reform and the system transformation that has to happen. And so I just wanted to explain the catalyst for reform component of the governor's Healthy Alaska plan. And with that, I will turn it over to Greg.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. You heard from economist Mohsin Gutabi at the top of the hour, followed by Deb Erickson, executive director of the Alaska Healthcare Commission. This forum examining healthcare costs in Alaska was hosted by Alaska Common Ground. It was recorded May 9th at the BP Energy Center. In the next half of the program, you'll hear from insurance broker and health benefits consultant Greg Loudon and the South Central Foundation's Vice President of Medical Services, Doug Eby. Here's Greg Loudon to start us off.
Over the last couple of months, we talked about roles that each of us were going to play in here. We're sort of assigned areas we were to talk about. Mohsin specifically had healthcare costs and sort of setting the stage for it. I had to sneak in a couple slides just on it to refute some of the claims I knew that Messine would take. We've had some really good conversations about this. Healthcare costs in general, are healthcare costs too high, specifically in Alaska? Deb referred to some of the studies that the Alaska Healthcare Commission has employed. Commercial payers in Alaska, and this is talking about insurance and large health plans, we reimburse physicians approximately 70% higher than in peer states. And that depends on which specialty you're talking about, what procedures. Many specialties, cardiology, for example, 83% higher overall. And this is just how much we reimburse for given procedures. Talk about the overall spend in healthcare in Alaska. We found that utilization was not a problem. I think that bears repeating. It's not the amount of healthcare that we consume, it's actually what we're paying for the care that we get. A lot of reasons for it. Deb gave an apology, I'll repeat the same thing. I don't mean to single out or pick on anyone. I think the problem that we have is something that we're all in together. We talk about the cost of healthcare and needing to do something about it, and actually Messine was much more reasonable today than he has been other times. We've talked about, is it really a problem if we pay too much for healthcare, or we pay a lot for healthcare? We pay a lot for everything. We have to ship goods and goods up here, services that are produced locally, cost more just because of the cost of living, higher healthcare costs, higher energy costs, a small market that we have to spread things across. Do want to point out, though, at the end of the day, really this debate is about whose ox is going to be gored. If we're going to do something about healthcare costs, we're going to lower the cost, who is going to suffer in that example? It's either going to be individual consumers who are paying more every time that they go to see a physician, or it's going to be employers who find more and more of their annual budget consumed by health insurance costs to provide care for their employees, or it's going to be providers who are going to have to give up some revenue that they have today. Those are really the only three areas that we can look at. Workers' compensation, one of the findings of the commission, and it's been a pretty hotly debated topic up until the budget concerns and the low cost of oil sucked all the air out of the room in the legislature, workers' comp is super high. We're number one. Yeah, it's not something to be proud about, but Alaska is the number one cost of workers' comp, and most of that is driven by the cost of medical expense. Here's a couple of specific examples on high cost, and these came from study that we had done. The Alaska Healthcare Commission hired Milliman, and Deb mentioned this already, in 2011 to look at the cost of healthcare in Alaska compared to the five peer states that they reviewed. So it was Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming, and North Dakota. These are some updated examples that, in addition to the ones that Milliman pointed out. Total joint replacement, so we're talking about hips and knees, and this is comparing Alaska costs to Seattle, this specific one is Washington. Average allowed for Alaska is $65,000. In Washington, it's $37,900, so 73% higher cost in Alaska if you want that particular procedure done than if you get it done in Washington. Deb mentioned the high cost of hospitals, and so we talk about facility charges, certainly higher. 48% higher costs on facilities. The outlier that really bears noting is the cost of providers. The average surgeon allowed fee for Alaska is $11,800 versus $3,052 in Washington State, 289%. Messine mentioned a lot of sort of inequities that exist in Alaska for all goods and services. You know, we've got the higher cost of healthcare, transportation, etc. It's hard just on a supply and demand basis to make an argument for why that's rational. Next example is cardiology, and this was actually looking at, just updated this from 2014 data, so looking at the highest volume of procedures that are performed. These are CPT codes on the left that mean something if you're a provider or a biller, probably not to most of you, but the description, echocardiography. In Alaska, the average allowed is $1,500. In Seattle specifically, this is King County data, so not rural areas in Washington, which typically are less in Washington State, $399. So 282% higher here in Alaska. Cardiovascular stress test, $587 allowed in Alaska, $166 allowed in Washington. And then catheter placement in a coronary artery, $11,471 in Alaska versus $2,000 in Washington. That one sticks out, 458%. Deb talked about some certain specialties and subspecialties are just dramatically higher. So I had the dubious honor, one of my assignments was to discuss some of the barriers to the free market in healthcare in Alaska, and specifically looking at some of the regulatory and or statutory differences that exist that are causing some of these inequities. Biggest one, and Musi mentioned this, is just a small market. We only have 700,000 people. We're one of the least populated states in the entire country. If you're looking for any kind of innovation or change, you need to have some sort of economic incentive. And right now, there's not a lot of incentive for new players to come into the market. We just don't have enough dollars that create that incentive for people to come in. Very little competition between providers. And this a lot depends on the specialty that you're discussing and the area of the state that you're in. If you're in a critical care access facility or a community in Bush, Alaska, in the rural area, you oftentimes only have one provider, and you're lucky to have that. So that in mind, just have to recognize there are some reasons for why healthcare costs are high in that manner. I did want to bring up some examples. There was a Fairbanks case, the Federal Trade Commission versus the Alaska Healthcare Network, and this was focused on a group of independent physicians association that was in Fairbanks operating from 1998 through 1999. The Federal Trade Commission came in and investigated them with the help of the FBI. In September 2000, they reached a consent decree, and then they came out with an order and finding in April 2001. And I've gotten copies of the actual order. You can go back and look it up, or if anyone has questions, I can discuss it afterwards. But they found that collusion and price fixing did occur and did exist in that market in Fairbanks at the time. There are 86 providers. I think it was a little over half of all the providers in Fairbanks that were part of that particular group, and they worked together to not only fix prices, but to also talk about the terms of any kind of contracts that they would engage in with healthcare payers or insurers. So that Federal Trade Commission case was effective. They did disband, and they've actually got a 20-year decree prohibiting them specifically from engaging in any kind of market activities, which would limit free trade. But the next legislative session, there was a bill passed, AS23.50.010, which allowed collective negotiation between providers. And it went back and made legal in this state many of the same prohibited actions by the FTC, with the exception of sharing fees. So sharing fees, discussing fees was specifically prohibited. Next page, this was a part of the same bill, but new statute. It was just the next section, 23.50.020. It allowed collective action by physicians. And it specifically protected documents provided by any of these physician groups that wanted to get together and discuss practices, any sort of ground rules by which they would contract, locked up the documents so that they could not be viewed publicly. And it specifically said that the Attorney General's office was not allowed to review any collective negotiation of fee-related terms. Now, to be fair, it also specifically prohibited providers from colluding on fees, so that's not a protected activity. None of us have done a study to say to what effect this has affected the cost of healthcare, so I can't say that specifically. I'm just bringing up some examples that exist in both statute and regulation that, on the face of it, look like they cause problems. Another one is administrative code, and this is 80% usual and customary regulation. This falls under section regulation for commerce, community, and economic development, standards for prompt, fair, and equitable settlement of health claims. So it just talks about consumer protection. We want to make sure that if you are a consumer and you go to the physician, you're going to get reimbursed at a fair amount, specifically you, the consumer, and it's going to get done in a quick manner. Section A2 says that determination for final payment for a covered service or supply has to be equal to or greater than the 80th percentile of charges. If you're just an individual and you're going to a doctor, that's a pretty good regulation. I mean, you'd like to have that. It's protection that says that, you know, we're not going to have an evil insurance company that's going to say 20% of usual and customary is how much we're going to pay based on. Interpretation of this has been different by different regulators and by different regulatees, different insurers that have to abide by this regulation. But the consensus has been that it has caused insurers to have to pay at a higher level for non-contracted providers. Now, probably worth explaining that a little bit. If there's a contract in-network provider between an insurance company or a payer and a physician, that means that both parties have willingly entered into this agreement. There's a service being provided at a price that everyone agrees on. So you've got consensus on that relationship. Non-contracted providers, though, are ones that don't want to enter into an agreement with the company. This specific regulation says that we have to pay at the 80th percentile of all charges within the community at that level.
Dr. Eby, please.
All right.
I think we're supposed to leave you a little time for questions at the end, so I'll work at that. But asking me to talk about this topic in 15 minutes is a cruel and unusual form of punishment. So let's start with a quote. Every system is perfectly designed to produce exactly what it is producing. Every system is perfectly designed to produce exactly what it is producing. That's not debatable, because it is producing exactly what it is producing, and therefore it is designed to produce exactly that. Healthcare spent 110 years getting to where it is today, and to think that some single or small set of issues is going to change and reverse and dramatically change in a positive way something that took us 110 years to get to where we are is false. It's oversimplistic thinking, and unfortunately that's what is being applied to healthcare solutions all over the world. I've had the great pleasure of spending the last 24 years working in support of Alaska Native people and their journey towards wellness. I spent the last 20 years working for Catherine Gottlieb, our board of directors, and the Alaska Native people affiliated with South Central Foundation in this part of Alaska. And my main job is to be an interpreter and applier of what they have said they want to do. So I'm here on partly on behalf of them and sharing some of the thoughts that we've had. So just a few other facts before I kind of launch and just leave it on the first slide for another minute or two. Why don't you go to the second slide? We are a private company working in the private sector, collecting the majority of our money from a fee-for-service volume-based system, okay? We are locally owned. We're a nonprofit, just like Providence is a nonprofit and like many other healthcare organizations this state are. But we are privately owned, and we get the most of our money from private insurers, Medicaid and Medicare in a fee-for-service environment. We also get a chunk of money from the Indian Health Service, but it is a minority of our funding. In large swaths of rural Alaska, we are the only provider, and we provide services to everyone, native, non-native, all different categories of people. In Wasilla, we are now the largest Veterans Affairs provider for non-native veterans. And we have lots of other ways in which we are active in things well beyond the Indian Health Service funded Alaska Native conversation. So a lot of people want to write us off and our story off as kind of, well, you're different, you're that kind of publicly funded quasi-federal native place. But our realities and our financial realities and our challenges and our revenue sources are really not all that different. The way we deliver is very, very different. If you go to the third slide. So this conversation is not specific to Alaska or Anchorage. There are a lot of specific things about Alaska and Anchorage, which you've heard quite a bit about today, which are very important to know and understand. But this conversation about exploding healthcare costs and the explosion of what's possible pharmaceutically, like the hepatitis C medication example, and robotics and all of the miracles of modern medicine is a worldwide conversation. And in fact, as our stories become more and more known, we are now serving as a template that people are looking at in quite a number of European countries, pretty much every province in Canada, lots of places in the US, and quite a bit in the Pacific Basin. So the challenges are relatively the same, which also ought to tell you that the issue of single payer and not single payer and kind of how you mess with the financing is not really at the core of what is most challenging about the costs and the effectiveness and the application of modern medicine and healthcare to society. And anyone who thinks that moving to single payer or full coverage or whatever is going to solve our issues as a society with the exploding costs and stresses and mismatching of expectations around healthcare isn't working in reality. Well, that doesn't mean those aren't important conversations. It doesn't mean that we aren't active, and it doesn't mean that I don't have a lot of opinions about them, which I'm more than happy to share, except they won't give me enough time. So just a few other things before I tell you a little bit about what we've done. Healthcare is not a single thing, and we talk about it as if it's a single thing. And you saw some of the numbers as if it is a single thing, but then they go into some of the details about how, you know, 3% drive this much and 5% drive 50% of the cost and 50% of the people consuming 3% of the cost. And that ought to make you stop and think why and what's happening then in the gradations of this thing we call healthcare. And there's a lot of really important conversations to be had there that we just plain don't have. First and foremost is, what are we trying to accomplish as a society, okay? Because the modern medical machine was set up to apply technological answers to people one at a time as they appear and maximize your profit and your life in the process of doing so. It is not set up or designed, nor do the people working in it primarily think that they are part of a systematic approach to improve the health of the people in the community over time. But yet, that's what policymakers talk about. If we're going to use public money, how are we improving the health of a population over time? And the goal of us as a society and a community with our public money is to improve the health of a community over time, but almost nothing about the system or the training or the way it runs is focused on that goal. It's focused on optimizing whatever's going on with the individual in front of you around your area of expertise while maximizing your bottom line in the process. That is how it runs. So that's a massive conversation we've never had. And by the way, I think this would be kind of supported by my insurance friend, that employer-purchased insurance is essentially a public asset, meaning that it's provided for large numbers of people and the policies around it are created for that large number of people with no input by the people on the receiving end and certainly no control of the variables or the costs or the money by the people for whom it's supposed to benefit. So that kind of makes it, in my opinion, sort of a public sector conversation or good. Now, you can argue about that, but there's certainly no individual market forces driving the proper. I mean, this whole thing that private practice medicine in this country is a market-driven reality, I'm not supposed to cuss, am I? It's just not true, okay? And they gave sort of examples, but didn't go deeply into it. The issues around the consumer and the people who actually drive the expenditure, which are the medical professionals, and the payer, and how they're in conversation with each other, has almost nothing to do with market-driven forces, okay? So, I was a little organized. Let me just see where I'm at here. So if you look at healthcare and all the different pieces, there's a lot of major subcategories, right? There's community services, there's physician offices, there's hospitals, there's surgery centers, there's radiology centers, there's skilled nursing facilities and assisted living. There's, I haven't moved forward yet. I'll let you know. There's disabled and all the costs around disabled. There's elderly. There's end of life. And then another thing that's come up in conversations with European countries, there's the whole social sector that hugely affects health outcomes as well. So there's like 15 or 20 big buckets under this big thing called healthcare. Oh, I didn't even mention dental, optometry, mental health, residential treatment facilities. And the fact we kind of put it all together into a bucket called healthcare is insane from an economic analysis perspective. And the fact we then try and fund it under a single like insurance policy is just as insane. These are different products with very, very different financial realities attached to each one of them. And we should therefore be interacting them as individuals, as employers, as payers, as an array of a whole lot of different products, not on the all under something called healthcare. Okay? So there's a lot of just fundamental things about this conversation that don't tend to come up because they're way too complicated for the average conversation to try and solve. But yet they are actually the root of this whole issue and why it's a problem in single-payer systems and socialized systems and free market systems is because they're all talking about what these guys have all spent their time talking about, which is how do we move the money around under this big, huge title called healthcare without breaking it apart and understanding the pieces, okay? Detroit went under, basically, with automobile manufacturing. And in order to reemerge successfully, as they for the most part have, they had to re-engineer things they had ignored for decades and redesign and recreate essentially the delivery system in order to be competitive and effective and relevant in the current conversation. Yet we somehow think that's not at the root of what needs to happen to healthcare. It makes no sense at all. So this temptation to simplify and so forth, and what do we pay for and not pay for? And I would love to sit and debate with these guys, which I really have not done enough of, about what's in their bucket. So when you give me a per person per year cost, what's in that bucket? Because that's what people want to know about us. What's your per member per month or your per person per year cost? And I won't answer the question until we have a conversation about what's in the bucket. Because it turns out, if you do a lot of things in community development and social support and family support and so forth, you can radically decrease a lot of medical costs, but yet those costs are not calculated and that is not considered as an interconnected system. And that's insane. So, and is optometry in these numbers or not? Is dental in these numbers or not? Is home health? What about community-based home visitors and home health? Is that in these numbers? What about out-of-pocket expenses? And you throw around the $9,000 average per person per year for what group of services? And is that, private insurers? So this gives you a glimpse of some of the numbers, but it's a way, way incomplete conversation. And until we have the more complicated conversation, we're not going to get there. All right. So, as a private company in Anchorage, Alaska, owned by Alaska Native people, that is consumer designed and consumer driven, what have we done? Well, we did a few things. Go back one. We dropped by over 50% per capita use of the ER, per capita use of specialists, per capita use of hospital beds, while dramatically improving health outcomes. And while dramatically improving satisfaction by both people working in the system and receiving services in the system. Now, we're not perfect. We have massive warts, and we fail to deliver perfectly every day, and people get pissed off at us all the time. We are far from perfect. We think we're about 50 or 60% through the real fundamental transformational journey, but compared to most other medical systems and healthcare systems, and compared to where we were, we look pretty good. But we look pretty good only because the rest of healthcare sucks so bad. Because we got a lot, we're still far, far from perfect and lots of problems in our system. But we did this. And we used to be in the bottom. We have a challenging population, moving from rural to urban and employment issues and educational issues and all kinds of different things. So in terms of social risk, we are at the top of the ladder. And when I first started doing some talking 15 years ago, people would ask me, why do you continue to work in that most hopeless of systems and places? And now that we're wildly successful compared to most other people, they're like, well, it's because you have all these unfair advantages, and they start to list them out. my middle finger gets itchy at that point. But what we've done is say, let's rethink fundamentally the core paradigm and the goal, and then redesign every single aspect of the entire system around that. And this applies in the private sector, in Canada, in Europe. This applies everywhere that modern medicine is part of the conversation. Okay. So we did, from the bottom up. We finally rethought everything. Go to the next one. This is a lot of what's wrong with healthcare today, right? We see everyone in person, which is just really stupid. We order everything possible because, and people think it's because we're paranoid about lawsuits, but really it's because way more than that, it's because we don't want to miss something. And there's massive pressure in our society to never miss anything. And most lawsuits are about missing things these days as opposed to other things. So it's partly lawsuit, but it's not really mostly lawsuit. It's this other piece. We give medicines, procedures, interventions for everything. Primary care is really just a triage system now that sends people to long lists of specialists. We optimize. This is a big deal. Healthcare has become a business. 30 years ago, people did more what we do, which is do the right thing and then figure out how to bill for it after you've done the right thing. I grew up in a medical family. I've been around medicine since I was like a baby. And it used to be that people just kind of did the right thing and then sort of figured out how to submit a bill and get paid. That changed starting 20 years ago. Medical practices and hospitals brought in financial analysts and advisors and so forth. And they now are in the business of making money like every other business. And they are maximizing their profits in legal ways in playing by the rules for how the system is set up. It's just the stupidest system human beings have ever created anywhere. All right, next. So the reality is that in most of healthcare now, it's driven by chronic conditions that are not fixable or curable, and they are not illnesses or diseases. They are chronic conditions people live with. So this is diabetes and hypertension and HIV, all kinds of different things. And the reality is most of the time they're in control. The patient, the family, the customer, owner are in control, and they're controlling the variables. Therefore, go to the next one. And I'll skip this. It's a fabulous analogy, but I don't have time for it. The next thing are the principles by which we run our entire system. But at the core is the next one, which is this, which is the idea of customer ownership, that people own their own health journeys, and they are making the decisions day to day that drive their costs, the utilization of medical resources, and how well they live with these dimensions of being human. Okay? And if that is true, then the core functionality is the next slide, which is to get to know them and what we call the story behind their eyes and connect to them around their internal motivators on their journey and support things that they're going to be deciding anyway to try and make healthier decisions. What that means structurally is a massive transformation of the actual delivery system. And this isn't at just some nice little, we're nice to people sort of thing. This is a fundamental redesign of what medical professionals do and how the entire system's set up. Go to the next one. We retrain every one of our staff completely and fully in a very sophisticated way. Next. We believe that this business of giving and receiving story and being in relationship and not keeping everyone at a professional distance, but rather embracing them as messy human beings and messy human relationships. Next. And seeing ourselves really as being in the service industry and not a product industry, and quit defining how we do things in assembly line and manufacturing type processes. Leave it there for a minute. This is the fundamental core premise. Now, there's hours of conversation about what we have done. We're very sophisticated. We're very sophisticated data models, data tracking, accountability, and all kinds of things that it takes to run a really, really high performance medical system. But what we are doing is providing a massively improved value for radically reduced money. And it's different than just waste. Okay, someone said 30% of healthcare is waste. Well, that's because they're looking at what could we do to keep doing things the same way but just drive waste out of the system. That's still the wrong conversation. What really works if you're trying to get to health for a whole community over time is how to partner with people effectively, be continually present. And how are we continually present in life these days? It's this thing right here. 75 to 80% of primary care and the fundamental platform of healthcare should be delivered through this device. Once I know you, you know me, I have all your information, and we have trust and relationship. We don't hardly ever need to see each other, but we need to be continually available as people make choices and help support and cheerlead and advise and consult, so that healthy and healthier decisions are made. Quick example, if I'm his physician and he has some new symptomatology, he has headaches, they're worse than they've been before, whatever, we have an email, phone, or video chat, I'm pretty sure there's nothing serious going on. He says, okay, I trust you. I say, here, try a few things. And we buy 3 or 4 days of either it's self-resolving or the home remedy's working, or it worsens and persists, and now it's clearer how to evaluate it. And we just avoided massive amounts of labs and x-rays and specialty consultations and what drives the massive cost of healthcare, this huge overutilization because it's all been distilled down to this symptom, this pill, this procedure, this test. And just by being in relationships, so in our system for 17 years, we've had guaranteed same-day access to tens of thousands of people, to the people who already know them and are in deep, deep relationship with them. So next page, this is how we organize a structure. That's a half-hour conversation. Next, this is the way healthcare is designed. Everything goes through the doctor, which is really stupid. Next, this is parallel processing, where you use all kinds of different people in the community and all kinds of different people to deliver in a carefully designed parallel processing system. And it turns out in service industries and manufacturing industries, if you parallel process, you get 1.5 to 3 times the productivity out of the same number of people. Next, we do a massive amount around workforce. We've had huge financial impacts. Next. And the following one shows some of our numbers. I already mentioned them. Another slide. This is the crashing down trend of ER use. Next slide. This is benchmarked to national standards, showing we're one of the best in the country. Next. This is admissions to the hospital crashing as well. Next, showing we're in the bottom 10% for the whole country. Next. And this is the money slide, showing that in the first 5 years, we dramatically reduced the per person per year cost for outpatient care and inpatient care, and that our rate of increase has been relatively flat. Except the last couple of years, it shows a significant increase in primary care because we've radically expanded the definition of what primary care is. We've really just taken money from elsewhere and put it here, and then it counts against us. So there's your money slide. Next. This I already mentioned. If you think that the future looks like the past, you don't live in today's world. And healthcare and the medical systems build on a manufacturing model from long ago, and it's trying to achieve something radically different than public policymakers think they're trying to achieve. And that's our beautiful campus. And this is why our CEO cares. Catherine has 6 children, 30 grandchildren, and 2 or 3 great-grandchildren. And we really, truly do have a 100-year horizon for what we're trying to do. And I'll stop.
You've been listening to a forum on healthcare costs in Alaska today on Addressing Alaskans. The panelists you heard from were Musin Gutabi and Deb Erickson at the top of the hour, followed by Greg Loudon and Doug Eby. This talk was significantly shortened for broadcast. If you'd like to listen to the complete forum, it's linked to on our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for tuning in with us this week on Addressing Alaskans. We had production help from Hannah Craig and Eric Keto. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Monica Goki.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.